What did we learn last week? Well, we learned that the flood didn't just last 40 days and 40 nights. That was how long it rained, but the flood lasted much longer than that. As a matter of fact, we learned that from the time the animals and Noah and his family went into the ark and God closed the door until the time that God opened the door and they all emerged from the ark was around one solar year. And then we talked about cavemen, and I hope you learned some things. We learned that while there were indeed cavemen, that their existence doesn't contradict the Bible, because the cavemen who lived and drew on cave walls didn't live before the flood, but after it. And that just because some people lived in caves doesn't mean that everybody did. Just because some lived in this primitive way doesn't mean everybody did. We saw that, there are, it's estimated, over 4 million people in the world today who live in caves or rock dwellings. There are more than 100 tribes scattered around the world, mostly in densely forested areas of South America and Central Africa and New Guinea, that have never been contacted by the outside world. They're totally cut off from civilization, from contemporary culture and technology. Essentially, they are untouched peoples. There are over 3,000 languages in the world that have never been reduced to writing. They're just spoken languages. They don't have an alphabet. Their language is not written. Well, that's hardly proof that all people everywhere live in such places and in such conditions. And most importantly, we learned that rather than disproving the Bible, the existence of primitive cultures proves the Bible. Because in the beginning, we saw that before sin had cast its full destructive potential on humanity, man was technologically advanced. He played musical instruments and forged iron and brass and built cities. It was only after the effects of the fall had progressed and man had degenerated from his original design that man began to live in seclusion and ignorance. We also learned that dinosaurs didn't become extinct 65 million years ago, but that dinosaurs and man lived together both before and after the flood. Dinosaurs came through the flood on the ark. Well, was it big enough for dinosaurs? Yeah, it was big enough for dinosaurs. We saw that the carrying capacity of the ark was the capacity of about 522 standard railroad stock cars, which was more than enough room for twice as many animals as existed in the world. By the way, Randy reminded me of something last week. He came up and was talking to me about this, and he was right, and I knew it, but it was something that I just hadn't mentioned, but I really should have. And that is, when we think of all the animals in the world, two of all the animals in the world, seven of all the clean animals, two of all the unclean animals that went aboard the ark, you understand that it's not talking about all of the subspecies of animals. There wasn't two dachshunds and two German shepherds and two St. Bernards. There were two, probably at that time, wolves. Remember, I told you at one point that, there weren't any chickens on the ark. there were some wild birds that came to be called Asian forest fowl. And it was from those birds that we get chickens, and there are lots of subspecies that have been developed over the years since the flood, but there weren't all of those subspecies. There were probably a pair of wolves from which all of the other subspecies of dogs came. Same thing with cats. All right, again, dinosaurs came through the flood on the ark, and it's not necessary that the dinosaurs were fully grown. Could have been juvenile animals that Noah brought on the ark. As a matter of fact, that would have been a very wise thing that God may have done. And it was only subsequently after the flood that dinosaurs became extinct, probably less than 4,500 years ago, and probably as a result of a number of things, limited vegetation, disease that didn't exist in the beginning, that was a result of the fall. And some, we said, may even have been hunted to extinction by man for more than one reason. One, just for protection, for defense, and then also for food. And we saw that there is both scientific and biblical evidence to support that position. And then finally, we learned that when Noah came out of the ark, he became the head of the human race, the new head of the human race, and as such, his first act, really as the high priest of the human race now, was to offer sacrifices of thanksgiving to the Lord for protection and provision. And we saw that God established then a covenant with Noah, the Noahic covenant, in which he made three major provisions. Number one was the divine provision for the protection of human life. Genesis 9:2 says, "And the fear and dread of you will fall upon all the beasts of the earth and all the birds of the air, and upon every creature that moves along the ground, and upon all the fish of the sea." And then verse 6 says, "They are all given into your hands. Whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God is God made man." And so there was that provision for the protection of human life. Number two, the second provision of the Noahic covenant was the divine provision for the sustenance of human life. Genesis 9:3, "Everything that lives and moves will be food for you, just as I gave you the green plants, now I give you everything." And so the provision for sustenance. And then finally, the divine provision for the assurance of all life. Chapter 9, verses 8 through 17, and I'm going to read all of that, but God gave man a covenant of promise that he will never again destroy the earth in the sin that way, and he secured it, you'll remember, by a sign, which was the rainbow. All right, now that's the review. Let's talk about the new. Let's pick up there. The first thing that we're going to talk about, the next thing we find as we work through these verses, is the disgracing of Noah. Look in chapter 9, beginning with verse 18. "The sons of Noah who came out of the ark were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Ham was the father of Canaan. And these were the three sons of Noah, and from them came the people who were scattered over the earth." Now remember that. That's an important statement, that from these three sons of Noah came the people who scattered over the earth. Noah, a man of the soil, farmer, proceeded to plant a vineyard, and when he drank some of its wine, he became drunk and lay uncovered inside the tent. Ham, the father of Canaan, saw his father's nakedness and told his two brothers outside. But Shem and Japheth took a garment and laid it across their father's shoulders, and then they walked in backwards and covered their father's nakedness. Their faces were turned the other way so that they would not see their father's nakedness. And when Noah awoke from his wine and found out what his youngest son had done to him." Now, we're going to stop right there, even though it's right in the middle of a sentence. The people who divided the Bible into books and chapters and verses did us great service, but they weren't always right, and there you have the end of a verse is right in the middle of a sentence. But we're going to stop there. And the reason is because we find in these verses that Noah was disgraced, and he was disgraced in two ways. First of all, obviously, he was disgraced because of what he did to himself. He became drunk and he passed out. And the second is by his son Ham. However, we don't know exactly what Ham did. It's just not made clear to us in the text. Some have said that it was some perverse act, but that is not correct. It's not implied in the original language or in the context. I mean, Ham immediately went and told his brothers, which he probably would not have done if he had been guilty of some immoral behavior. And second, the remedy appears to just simply have been to cover up Noah with a garment. And so it's likely that Ham just merely saw his father naked, and there are a number of reasons why that was considered an offense. You know, we in the West, including Christians, have been so influenced by the Greek culture and Renaissance art, and both of those really glorified and depicted the naked body. Our contemporary culture increasingly disregards modesty. I get amazed sometimes at how people disregard modesty. But, you know, it's become so much a part of who we are as a country, as a culture, and so forth, that a lot of people are just not offended by nakedness as they were in the ancient culture. Nakedness was associated with paganism and fornication, and it produces lust and acts of immorality as a part of the moral law that would eventually be given to Israel. God included in that a strong condemnation of nakedness and looking at the nakedness of others. And so it may simply have been that Ham just saw his father's nakedness, and he didn't really do anything to preserve the dignity of his father. He didn't see to it that Noah was properly covered. Instead, what he did was go outside to his brothers and probably graphically describe what had happened to their father, what he had seen. And he may even have ridiculed and dishonored his father by encouraging Shem and Japheth to go into the tent and to see for themselves what he had seen, which they did not. And so Noah awoke and realized that he had been shamed in this way. And so we find next in our text, the cursing of Canaan. After Ham's sin, God through Noah speaks the following prophecy. Look in verses 24 through 27 of chapter 9. And when Noah awoke from his wine and found out what his youngest son had done to him, he said, "Cursed be Canaan. The lowest of slaves will he be to his brothers." He also said, "Blessed be the Lord, the God of Shem. May Canaan be the slave of Shem. May God extend the territory of Japheth. May Japheth live in the tents of Shem. And may Canaan be his slave." Now, understand as you read that, this is not all just about Ham, but it's about his son Canaan, and it's also about his other two sons. Now, there are three parts to this prophecy. Number one, first, Canaan, Ham's son, is to be a servant of servants to both Shem and Japheth. And we'll see later in our study, the descendants of Ham became primarily the black races residing in the region of Africa. Now, BJ, why would you point that out? Well, the reason I mentioned that is because some have tried to use this verse to justify slavery. And they have said that as a result of this sin, the descendants of Ham were placed into slavery to Japheth, from who descended the primarily white races of Europe. Not totally white races, but primarily the white races of Europe. And that, so they would say, well, the blacks were put into slavery to the whites. And I have to tell you, folks, I pastored for a while a church in southern Mississippi back in the early 80s, and this is really what those people believe. They came to me and told me that, and I tried to talk to them about it and tried to teach them, but their minds were made up, and we didn't stay there very long. That is not what this verse means. That is not what this verse means. It doesn't even mention the descendants of Canaan, but only Canaan himself. And you'll notice Canaan is also placed in servitude to Shem, who became the head of the Arab and the Hebrew races, and yet often the same people who attempt to justify the slavery of blacks based on this verse also preach the inferiority of the Jewish race. And yet Canaan was said to be a slave of Shem as well. Now, the second portion of this prophecy declares that Jehovah is to be the God of Shem. And, of course, we know that nearly all divine revelation from this time forward was given through Semitic men. From Shem came Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and the nation of Israel. And Christ was a descendant of Shem through Mary. And then the third section of this prophecy deals with Japheth, and two prophecies are made about him. First, God, it is said, will extend the territory of Japheth, and history records the exact fulfillment of this prophecy, and we're going to talk more about this in a minute, because in addition to a large portion of geography that became the domain of the Japhetic peoples, those that came from Japheth, also government and science and art all have come mostly from Japhetic people. Now, the next part of this revelation states that Japheth will dwell in the tents of Shem. And throughout much of the history of the world, Semitic people have lived under Japhetic rule, especially, you remember we've talked about this in our study of Daniel, especially since 605 BC when Israel was taken captive into Babylon. And you remember that that event marked the beginning of a period of time that Jesus himself referred to as the times of the Gentiles, in which the world would be ruled by Gentiles. As a matter of fact, just turn over to Luke chapter 21 for just a second and take a look at that verse with me. I want you to see that. Luke chapter 21 and verse 24. Luke chapter 21 and verse 24. They will fall by the sword and will be taken as prisoners to all the nations. Jerusalem will be trampled on by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. So the times of the Gentiles began about 605 BC with the captivity of Israel, of Judah, into Babylon, and will continue until the coming of Christ following the 7 years of tribulation at the end of the church age. It's also been suggested that to dwell in the tent of was a phrase in this culture that meant to partake of what belonged to the owner. And so with that understanding, this was a prophecy that all of the peoples of the earth would one day receive benefits through Christ, who was the descendant of Shem. And of course, that really is just a pre-statement of what we're going to see, what you'll see in Genesis chapter 12, the beginning of that, the Abrahamic covenant, that all the nations of the earth would be blessed through the descendants of Abraham, who of course was a descendant of Shem. All right, now we're ready to move on to chapter 10. And I want you to understand something about this and the next chapter. Genesis chapters 10 and 11 are not recorded in chronological order. The events of chapter 11 occurred first. And that's not an error, but it's simply a literary device. And you find literary devices used all through the scripture. You find some of the Psalms and the Proverbs where each verse or each chapter begins with a succeeding letter of the Hebrew alphabet. There are all kinds of literary devices that are used in the Bible, and this is one of them. Chapter 10 identifies the nations that descended from each of Noah's three sons. But chapter 11 explains how the dispersion of those nations took place, how they came about. And that's important to understand because without it, when you read chapter 10, you might get the idea that when the family of Noah began to increase, that they immediately began willingly and immediately began to migrate across the face of the earth, when in fact they did not relocate naturally or willingly. And we'll see when we get to chapter 11 that there was a monumental rebellion against the idea of expansion and dispersion. For whatever reason, they didn't want to disperse. They didn't want to obey the command of God. They wanted to remain geographically united. But it was God's plan for mankind to be scattered over the face of the earth. And Scripture makes it clear that God communicated His will to the people and that He made certain that it happened. And of course, we'll talk more about that when we get into chapter 11. From that dispersion, though, sprang all of the nations of the world. Look at a couple of passages with me. Look at one there, not too far away from Genesis, in the book of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 32, and look with me there in verse 8. Deuteronomy chapter 32 and verse 8. Moses writing there says, Deuteronomy 32:8, when the Most High gave the nations their inheritance, when he divided all mankind, he set up boundaries for the people according to the number of the sons of Israel. And so God set up boundaries. He had a design for where he wanted the people of the world to be located, and he divided them up and sent them out. Go over to the New Testament, to the book of Acts, and look in Acts chapter 17. Paul was preaching there to the men of Athens. And he also makes a reference to this intent and event. Acts chapter 17 and verse 26. Acts 17 and verse 26. From one man he made every nation of men that they should inhabit the whole earth. And he determined the times set for them and the exact places where they would live. And so it wasn't any accident that people went in various directions, different parts of the world. God outlined that and determined that and set boundaries there and sent them out. Now, go back to chapter 10 of Genesis. And we find here listed the names of the descendants of Noah through his three sons, Japheth, Ham, and Shem. And many of the names listed are not only names of individuals, but also became the titles of nations and people groups that descended from them. And I'm going to do my best to try to sort through some of these and just give you a little bit of an idea about your heritage. Where did your family originate? Do you know? Well, we're going to look at some of that. So if you came from Europe or wherever, we're going to look at some of that. It's not going to be exhaustive, of course, but we'll just mention a few of these. Let's talk first of all about the descendants of Japheth. Look in Genesis 10, verses 2 through 5. The sons of Japheth, Gomer, Magog, Madai, Javan, Tubal, Meshech, and Tyrus. The sons of Gomer, Ashkenaz, Riphath, and Togarmah. The sons of Javan, Elisha, Tarshish, and the Kittim, and the Rodanim. Remember that in Hebrew, when it ends with an I-M, it's plural. So the Kittim and the Rodanim is plural. That's a group of people that descended from Javan. From these, the maritime people spread out into the territories by their clans within their nations, each with its own language. Now, we learn from these verses that out of Japheth have come the Indo-European nations. Gomer is the ancestor of the Celts, and among the nations that came from him are, of course, England and Ireland and Scotland and Wales. Various regions of Russia appear to have come from Magog, Tubal, Meshech, and Tyrus. Madai is the father of the Medes. From Javan came the Greeks. Ashkenaz is the father of the Turks and the Germans. Elisha's descendants became the nation of Italy. Tarshish was probably the forefather of Spain. And then others that descended from Japheth include, and this is kind of interesting, India. And, you know, I mentioned a while ago that many of the Japhethite nations are white, are Caucasian people, but if you've ever been to India, you know that most of the Indians are black, and yet they are Japhethites, so you can't say that all blacks are Hamites, or that all Hamites are black. That's not true. Those in India are Japhethites, and also Afghanistan, Pakistan, Romania, the Vikings, the Swedes, the Norwegians, the Danes, and others, but those are the primary nations that came from Japheth. All right, then in verses 6 through 20, we find the descendants of Ham. Look there with me. The sons of Ham, Cush, Mizraim, Put, and Canaan. The sons of Cush, Seba, Havilah, Habitha, Rama, and Sabteca. The sons of Rama, Sheba, and Dedan. Cush was the father of Nimrod, who grew to be a mighty warrior on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. That is why it is said, like Nimrod, a mighty hunter before the Lord. We're going to look at Nimrod in more detail later. The first centers of his kingdom were Babylon, Erech, Akkad, and Calneh in Shinar. From that land, he went to Assyria, where he built Nineveh, Rehoboth, Calah, Rezin, which is between Nineveh and Calah. That is the great city. Mizraim was the father of the Luddites, the Ammonites, the Lehabites, the Haphthonites, the Pathrusites, the Kalushites, from whom the Philistines came, and the Kaphtorites. Canaan was the father of Sidon, his firstborn, and of the Hittites, Jebusites, Amorites, Girgashites, Hivites, Arkites, Arkites, Sinites, Arvandites, Amerites, and the Hamathites. Later, the Canaanite clan scattered, and the borders of Canaan reached from Sidon toward Gerar as far as Gaza, and then toward Sodom, Gomorrah, Admah, and Zeboiim as far as Lachish. These are the sons of Ham by their clans and languages in their territories and nations. And so that's a lot. And from Ham came the nations that largely, though not exclusively, settled in the continent of Africa. Cush, it is generally agreed, became the people of Ethiopia. From Mizraim came the nation of Egypt. Put is synonymous with Libya. Two descendants of Ham who did not settle initially in Africa were the Sidonians, or the people of Phoenicia, which is modern Lebanon, and the Hittite nations were the descendants of Heth, and the Canaanites who inhabited Palestine when Israel conquered the land were also descendants of Ham. During the period of Judges, Jerusalem wasn't called Jerusalem. It was called Jebus. Look over in Judges chapter 19. Judges chapter 19. And look with me there in verse 10. Judges chapter 19 and verse 10. Judges 19:10. But the man would not spend the night. He arose up and departed and arrived opposite Jebus, that is, Jerusalem. He had with him a couple of saddle donkeys, and his concubine was with him. So Jerusalem was, before it became Jerusalem, was called Jebus. Why is that? Well, because it was the home of the Jebusites, who were the descendants of Ham through Canaan. And other nations and people groups that are of Hamitic descent are the Chinese, Japanese, other Asians, American Indians, Eskimos, Australian Aborigines, Polynesians, Pacific Islanders, and others. And then, of course, the descendants of Shem, we've talked about that a little bit. Look, beginning in verse 21, the sons were also born to Shem, whose older brother was Japheth. Shem was the ancestor of the sons of Eber. Remember that name. I'll tell you something about that in a minute. The sons of Shem, Elam, Asher, Arphaxad, Lud, and Aram. The sons of Aram, Uz, Hul, Gether, and Meshach. Arphaxad was the father of Shelah, and Shelah the father of Eber. Two sons were born to Eber. One was named Peleg, and just draw a circle around that because we're going to hear about Peleg later too. Because in his time, the earth was divided, so keep that in mind. His brother's name was Joktan. Joktan was the father of Almadad, Sheleph, Hazar Mavath, and Jerah, Hadoram, Uzal, Degala, Obal, Admiel, Sheba, Ophir, Havilah, and Jobab. All these were sons of Joktan. The region where they lived stretched from Mesha toward Sephar in the eastern hill country. These are the sons of Shem by their clans and languages in their territories and nations. And so from Shem came many of the Arab nations and the Israelis. Elam lived in the area that became Iraq. And so it's interesting, those natives who can trace their lineage back through time in Iraq are Shemites. Asher settled in the region that is now Iran. Uz fathered the people of Saudi Arabia. And Eber is the name from which we get the word Hebrew. And through him came the Jews and all who descended from them. All right. Well, we did pretty good there.